Good morning, Tucson. Welcome to this Friday edition of the Creative City Show with me, your host, Zach Yenser. As every day, Monday through Friday, 10 to 12, we share the stories and strategies of the people and ideas shaping Tucson's future. And along the way, we envision, we debate, we discuss the issues and themes critical towards getting to that future. And I'm excited that our 10 o'clock hour today is going to be back to back with two men in Tucson that have taken up the call to run for office. And I'm talking about Rob Elias and Sammy Hamed, two Ward 1 candidates, both running as Democrats for the Ward 1 City Council seat that is open, as current council member Rahina Romero has decided to run for mayor. And if any of this is news to you, I don't know what to do for you. If this is breaking news, Tucson, we need to have a different conversation. But we wanted to do our second and our final interview with Ward 1 candidates as ballots are going out. And that is our Hour 1 show. And I'm going to keep a secret, our Hour 2 show. So won't promote that for now. But I want to get right into it with Rob Elias, our first Ward 1 candidate here in studio with us. Rob, thank you for being here today.
Oh, thank you, Zach. Appreciate the time.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to, I've been calling my second interviews my daylight interviews, because for a while in Tucson, I think at multiple levels, Ward 1's heavily contested. The mayoral election is pretty contested, more than I think it's been in a couple decades, I would say.
Without a doubt.
And for a while, there was a ton of agreement, right? Everybody agreed with each other, right? I agree. And it was like, it's the same views, just three people saying it. But since those first interviews, there's been a lot of daylight. And so I want to talk about some daylight issues, some things that I think show some key differences between candidates in a good way, because our voters in Tucson have their ballots. It's a mail-in process, and they need to bubble that in and get that in by August 21st. So when they look at candidates, I want to do my part in giving people the tools they need to make their best decision.
I appreciate you doing that for us.
Well, for sure. I do my part. Rob Elias, real quick, because we have about 25 minutes, refresh our memory, introduce yourself in terms of what was your tipping point moment as a candidate when you said, I got to get in, it's my time, I need to be a part of this. To introduce yourself to the listeners.
Sure. Well, I'm a native Tucsonan, and the city has helped me tremendously. I've grown to see this city in a lot over my 40 years of life. And I've benefited from a lot of Tucsonans, a lot of friends, a lot of family, a lot of love that I've received, and a lot of help along the way. And I thought this was a great time for me to get involved, to give a little bit back, to see if I can help shape and mold the city to its full potential. So I thought, you know, if this is an opportunity for me to do it, then let's give it a shot, and we'll let the voters decide who they think would be the best candidate for the job.
Super. There's just so many key issues. I feel like Ward 1 is a community, is a subpart of our community that really is facing all the big questions that Tucson is as a whole. And one of the things that I got asked when I started, you know, floating on, hey, I want to have my second interviews with some of these contested primary candidates, I got a lot of responses like, hey, we're hearing all the right things, right? There's no one that's saying we don't need more cops.
Right.
There's no one that says our roads are in fantastic shape, let's move on, right? Mm-hmm. The candidates are all saying the right things. The question I kept getting is, what is the plan? Right? What are these candidates' plans, right? If we all agree we need more cops, how do we get there?
Sure.
And comically, early on, and it wasn't from you, so don't worry. Mm-hmm. Early on, I would hear different candidates at different levels, right? Be asked, hey, we have a police problem. What do we do to solve it? And the answer was, we have a police problem. We need to solve it, right? And it was just like, okay, how do we get past what everybody knows? What's the plan? So what is the Rob Elias plan to better support more police on the street and our fire department? You've been endorsed by the Tucson Fire Department Union. Mm-hmm. What's the plan?
So I guess the simple answer is just to work with leadership, work with other city council members, work with the mayor, and certainly work with Mike Ortega, the city manager, to see what room we have in the budget in order to do a better job of recruiting police and fire, specifically police, as you mentioned. And I mean, it sounds like a really 30,000 foot answer, but that's honestly the truth. We can't hire police officers or pay our police officers better if we don't have the funding to do it. So one thing that we need to do is we need to work with the city manager to see what the budget is, where can we find dollars to reallocate or move around to try to find some money to recruit more police officers. And not only that, Zach, but our police force should mimic and should look like the community they serve. So certainly, and I know our police chief is one of his initiatives is to hire more minorities, hire more women as police officers. And I think that's incredibly important because a police force should look exactly like their community that they serve. So I don't know if that really answers your question, but in all honesty, it's as simple as working with the leadership that's already there, which being Mike Ortega, the city manager, whoever the next mayor is going to be and whoever the other council members will be, to see where we can find some funding to make that happen. Beyond that, we can look into bond packaging like we've done in the past to help fund things like firefighters and more equipment that was also included with better roads. So those are really the simple low-hanging fruit things that we can do already. We can hit the ground running with that.
You have public safety and service union support, and they have, this is all on public record, and there are people in this town really good at putting that in the papers, so it's all public information.
Right.
But you've received a lot of support from the firefighting community. Why do you think that they put their support behind you, Rob Elias?
I think they appreciate my pragmatic approach to solving problems. I think that... I guess, although I may be new to the political realm, I'm not new to Tucson, and I've seen a lot in this town when I've grown up here. But I think they understand that I can look at things from different perspectives, and that is going to come in extremely well received with this position, because we don't have the luxury of looking at things from one perspective. We have to look at things from multiple perspectives. The other thing that I believe that that fire, for example, likes with me is that I have said from the very beginning that the safety and security of our citizens should be of the utmost importance as our job as leaders in the community. And if we aren't serving our community through better response times by responding when calling 911, whether it's police or fire, then we're not doing our job. So putting an emphasis on that is paramount. And I can't speak for how my opponents feel about that. That's how I see it. And that's obviously resonated very well with police and fire.
So much that we have to get into here with Rob Elias, Democratic candidate for Ward 1. I don't know. Well, I do know. I know as a candidate, you've looked at the city budget, and I've looked at it as well. And Mayor Rothschild will leave it in the black, which is a huge step for this community. But from my uneducated look, it's pretty skinny. I mean, there's not, you know, these vast amounts of cash sitting in a light item that jump out to me and go, man, that needs to be reallocated to XYZ. I don't know if you share that opinion, but it seems like when we talk about these things, it's both about responsible use of current resources, but then also growing the economic pie.
Right.
Unless I'm mistaken, you're the only Ward 1 candidate that I've seen that has in his platform or her platform, there is Lane Santa Cruz is running. It's three other dudes, but Lane Santa Cruz is running in Ward 1. The only candidate to really highlight the need for high-paying jobs and to be using that language. Why do you think you're the only candidate to be talking about high-income jobs in the city, and what's your plan to get more of those to come into the city limits?
Sure. Well, I don't know if I'm the only candidate. I'm sure others feel the same way that I do, but I have.
But you've explicitly put it in your platform.
Yes, without a doubt, and because I think it's very important. My background is business. I've spent the better part of 20 years in Tucson in a leadership capacity, where I've led teams, I've led departments into making companies better. Also, I also own my own business consulting company where I work with small businesses and to help them grow responsibly and pragmatically so that they can realize their successes at a sooner time, or at least achieve the things they're trying to achieve. So one of the things that we need to talk about more as a community is, how do we grow the Tucson economy with better paying jobs? And that's as simple, it's no secret. You need to get companies, number one, that fit within our values as a city. So Tucson, whether we like to believe it or not, we have our own values. Tucsonans, we do have shared values. We want Tucson to continue to be unique. We loved the fact that we're a small town feel. We're a big city with a small town feel. I like to say we're 2 degrees of separation in Tucson. I don't believe we're trying to be a Phoenix. I'm not an advocate for that. So we need to do a better job of telling our story of who we are and what we believe in, and that will start to attract those companies that believe in those same things. Beyond that, we need to work with the companies that we already have here, big and small, and help them define what our common purpose is for them as a company, and how does that fit into the broader picture of who we want to be as a city in the future. We don't have luxuries of sitting back and saying, oh, we have time. Let's start building the city that we see right now. You know, we can talk about things that we want to see in 20 or 30 years from now, but we need to be stepping in that direction right now.
The iconic Ward 1 example is the Grand Canyon University debacle.
Right.
And I would say that whether you were for that or against it, mm-hmm. you called it a debacle.
Mm-hmm.
There's not too many Ward 1 residents that don't see that negatively for one reason or another.
Right.
Grand Canyon University comes to council member Rob Elias. What's the Rob Elias decision on Grand Canyon University at the El Rio?
The first thing that we have to do is talk to the citizens that it's going to affect. So we need to talk to the Menlo Park area, certainly get the El Rio Neighborhood Center, a neighborhood association, and talk to them about what's the story here. Beyond that, we need to have a greater conversation with Grand Canyon. Of course, this is now hypothetical because it's now in the past.
Yeah, this is almost a symbolic hypothetical.
Exactly.
But it's exactly what you're talking about,
yeah.
Bringing high-wage jobs.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's going to be in your backyard.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah, so no decision made of that scale can be made without having the community involvement, having open dialogue and genuine, authentic conversation about these potential developments or issues or challenges. And the only thing that does, Zach, when we open up these lines of communication, is just make projects better. It just makes Tucson better. The citizens were heard loud and clear over this last issue with Grand Canyon and El Rio, and they didn't want it in there. I've talked to a lot of people that thought it was a mess, and they would have had no problem selling El Rio Golf Course to build a Grand Canyon. I don't have an opinion on the way that went down. I really wasn't as in tuned as I should have been at the time. But how we go about solving those problems, or looking at those types of opportunities, is by doing it together. And a big platform of mine is we need to have open dialogue across all spectrums. We need to hear from all people so we know that we're making the best decision for the West Side and the best decision for Tucson overall.
Well, you hinted at what was going to be my follow-up question is Councilmember Regina Romero was for it, famously,
right.
Before the community feedback, and then came out against it. And this has been a major talking point.
Mm-hmm.
Did Regina Romero handle that situation well in your mind? And how would you do it differently?
Well, I don't know if I'm the right person to say whether she handled that properly or not. I think everybody has the right to change their mind if they've received new information. Maybe something came in at the 11th hour that caused her to change her mind. Maybe she had a very open dialogue with the people of the El Rio neighborhood at the last minute, and they convinced her that this was a bad decision. I don't know the method that she went through this, so I can't say whether it was good or it was bad. All I know is what you know. She was for it, and then at the last minute, she decided to vote against it. And I'm not going to criticize her decision or her method of how she came to that conclusion, because I just don't know. What I do know is that she obviously had conversations with people in the neighborhood and it swayed her decision. And I think having those conversations was absolutely the right thing to do. That's what we should be doing as council members.
We have about 10 minutes left, and I want to get into another big hot topic. There's two that are on my list to try to get through. The one, I call this a daylight issue, because first from watching it, I think that you have a distinct position from the other three on this, and that's Sanctuary City. Mayor and council put it on the November ballot, and again, a lot of people get confused. That was not necessarily because the mayor and council supported it. In fact, most of the mayor and council are heatedly against this. But when you get the votes, when you get the signatures, as Tucson Families Free and Together did, it was more of an administrative placement on the November ballot. The other three candidates seem to have, there was one candidate, Miguel Ortega, who came out very strong in support of it. Sammy Hamed has come out very strong in support of it. Lane Santa Cruz has appeared to change her position throughout the election. Again, this is a journalistic observation, but you have not. You have come out against the Sanctuary City legislation or ordinance on the table from the beginning. Well, what is your concern with that for Tucson?
Well, first, I think it's important that we congratulate the people of the initiative for their hard work and diligence into bringing this issue to the forefront. It's obviously something that people care very deeply about, and I, as a Tucsonan, do as well. As I read the initiative and speak to people about it, because I get it, this question asked a lot, my opinion still hasn't changed. And the major concern, there's actually a couple major concerns for me with this initiative, is I'm able to see down the road and know what's going to happen with it. So number one, we're going to be sued by the state attorney general, and we risk very real risk of losing state funding. And that's, as you pointed out earlier, we don't have a lot of room in the budget to, and we can't afford to have state monies removed from us. It's a risk. It's not absolutely this will happen. The other thing that is a even bigger concern of mine is that it restricts our law enforcement to work with other law enforcement agencies. And let me give you an example. I talk about my 10-year-old daughter a lot, and I love her to death. Now, if something were to happen to her, heaven forbid, she gets kidnapped, there's an Amber Alert out there. Our local law enforcement would not, if this initiative were to pass, our local law enforcement would not be able to work with other law enforcement agencies in order to find my child. And that's unacceptable to me. If my child were to be kidnapped, I would want every single law enforcement agency there on the planet to be looking for my daughter. That's just how that works. And I'm sure as a parent, you understand that as well. These are just two kind of random examples. But if there was a young lady out there that was raped, and there's a rape kit involved, the city of Tucson police would not be able to use the FBI's database to analyze that rape kit to see who committed that crime. And that, again, is unacceptable to me. So I'm not in favor or in support of restricting our law enforcement to not work with other agencies. I think we need to work with everybody to try to solve the crimes and problems that need to be solved. So that's why my position was and still is that I do not support and I oppose the Sanctuary City Initiative.
If you're listening to this interview, I'm with Rob Elias, Democratic candidate for Ward 1. In just a few minutes, Rob will exit the studio for our part of the interview, and we'll probably run into Sammy Hamed. Two great guys that enjoy each other's company, but I think two very different candidates. And
yes.
So I'll be asking Sammy a lot of the same questions if you're listening, and I'm expecting different answers. And I'm curious to get our community listening to what I think are some different positions in a healthy way. One last, we've got about 5 minutes left, and I want to leave room at the end just to restate your platform, Rob Elias. My last daylight question, an area that I think you are different from the other candidates. In Ward 1, right, and we're focusing on Ward 1, housing issues have been at the forefront of the conversation. Arizona is a real estate lobby-driven state. Rent control is not allowed. Inclusionary zoning is not allowed. Yet there have been a lot of candidate conversations about using those tools to increase more affordable housing. At the same time, in the metro area, there's less than 3,000 homes on the multiple listing service. So we have a housing shortage with not a lot of market demand to expand that at this point in time. How does a Rob Elias Ward 1 council leadership manage conversations about housing and affordable housing in Ward 1?
Those conversations are going to be dictated by the conversations that I have with my constituents. And it's something that it's very important as I walk neighborhoods and I talk to, and I'm knocking on doors and talking to my neighbors, that there is a concern about the cost of housing in Tucson, is specifically on the west side, because we do have those pockets of culture and heritage and history and beauty. And so I imagine the question you're getting at involves gentrification. And so one of the things that we need to talk about is, with that issue, it's not so much the issue of displacement or the fact that housing costs are increasing within the west side of Tucson and it's causing displacements. But the bigger issue is, what is it doing to, I guess, having our neighborhoods become the same or changing? And, you know, these neighborhoods that have been around for hundreds of years are changing because the scope and the look of Tucson is changing. And I don't think people are moving into these historic neighborhoods to change the heritage or the culture. They're moving in because they want to be a part of it. They want to be included in that. So I think to answer your question, Zach, to continue to have an open dialogue with our neighbors, to open up the lines of conversation and have these authentic, genuine conversations. And that's one of the things that I plan on doing is starting a neighborhood preservation advisory board, that we can have these open discussions of, what are your concerns as the neighbors? Let me talk to you about any development that I hear coming into town. How do you feel about that? That is the only way that we're going to be able to have an adequate and equal seat at the table with council, is just so I'm running to be a mouthpiece for my neighbors. I'm really just going to represent them, and I want to see Tucson shaped in a way that makes us prosperous. So I don't know if that answers your question or not, but that's how I feel about housing. Do we need affordable housing? Yes, we do, but it's all about perspective. What's considered affordable? And those are the conversations that we need to be having.
So in about 30 seconds, as a follow-up, and then we'll have 1 minute for you to have the floor before we take off. But I think that there's been, broadly in the city, there's kind of a more a market-based approach to this situation, and then a little bit more of a government ARS kind of statute driven solution to this. On that spectrum, where does Rob Elias land?
I think government needs to, local government needs to help solve the problems that need to be solved. And if that includes helping people live in place longer, then that's something that we should do. Having the programs that the city already has in place, the city already has been very proactive in creating resources for allowing people to stay in their homes longer. We just need to continue to fund those, and frankly, we need to do a better job telling people that they exist.
I cannot agree more with that very last part. The messaging in city administration needs a lot of help.
Yes, I agree.
It needs a lot of help. Rob Elias, Ward 1 candidate for city council, ran as a Democrat. We have a few seconds left. Your website, your platform, 5 days to mail in those ballots.
Yes.
Your final call to action, sir.
Yeah, so my final call to action is just please vote. It's as simple as that, Zach. And somebody asked me the other day, what if I had one wish for Ward 1, what would it be? And my response was just vote. Be knowledgeable about the issues and give your opinion. And I'm, of course, I do want your vote, but more importantly, I want people to vote. And even if it's not for me, I understand. And I'm completely fine with that. There are 3 other very good candidates in this race. I'd be honored to have their vote. But I would be happier if we got the actual number of votes up compared to where it's been historically. And I think all the candidates have done a good job getting the issues out there and talking to people about it. So I commend all of us for doing that. But I really see Tucson be a vibrant community. I think we can do a better job bringing higher paying jobs and more jobs to Tucson by recruiting companies and growing our existing small businesses that have already fallen in love with Tucson. We need to do a better job being a steward of the environment. That is a huge platform of mine. And the third and final thing is just getting more people engaged in what the issues are, how local government actually impacts people's lives.
Rob Elias, thank you so much for your time. Candidate endorsed by the Tucson Metro Chamber of Commerce, endorsed by the Firefighters Union, and running for Ward 1
and City, Police Officers
City
Association.
Council, and Police Officers Association, yeah. So public safety.
Yes.
Thank you, sir, for your time. Best of luck.
Thank you for the platform, Zach. Thank you.
Absolutely. Tucson, when we come back, we'll have a very similar conversation, but I think with some very different answers from another Ward 1 candidate running as a Democrat, Sami Hamed. We'll be right back after the break here on 1030 The Voice for that interview. Trusted local news and talk. Tucson, welcome back to the Creative City Show on this lovely Friday here on 1030 The Voice. Trusted local news and talk. We are wrapping up our Ward 1 City Council interviews this week. It was important to us to get both the mayoral candidates and the available Ward 1 candidates together. Those are two contested primary elections, and mail-in ballots are due on the 21st. For the final result on August 27th. So we are rapidly approaching that timeline. And so we wanted to have some of these critical, crucial conversations with the candidates running for office. We just finished with another Democrat running for Ward 1, Rob Elias. He just stepped out of studio, and Sami Hamed stepped in and took his exact seat here in the KVOI studios. Sami Hamed, welcome to the studio. Thanks for coming.
Zach, thank you for inviting me on the show this morning. Thank you so much. I'm looking forward to hearing the questions, and even from viewers out there, hearing their comments and questions as well.
Absolutely.
Listeners, excuse me.
Well, the invite is open, 790-2040, as it was for the first part of the hour. And, I think this show understands that when you run for office, it's not a safe space in the sense of that you signed up to answer all the questions, the easy ones, the hard ones, the softballs, the hardballs. And one of the reasons why I really enjoy talking to you, Sami, is your reputation out there is as the policy wonk. You're the wonky one, at least in my book. And so I'm looking forward to asking you a lot of the same nitty gritty questions that I asked Rob Elias and getting your view, because I call this second interview. We interviewed you first on the show a couple months ago. I think this is a daylight interview, I've been saying, because I think in the past couple months, some key issues have shown daylight between the four Democrats running for office, and that's a good thing in Ward 1. Let's start with this question. Sami, what was the tipping point moment for you when you decided you needed to get into the race? I want to get in your head for about a minute and a half.
Well, first of all, obviously it was an open seat, so that helped me the decision easier on that one.
You know what? With Sami, you're always going to get the straight answer. So
it was an open seat. One. That's the first one. The second one is obviously that I think I can do the job. I can do a good job, and I think I could do a different job than what's been done for a long time in Ward 1 in the last 12 years. Is one thing I've heard for years, but I've heard a lot as a candidate now in the last six going on 7 months is. We want a council member that has an office that's accessible and responsive, and we feel that a lot of people feel like they haven't had that, even though whether it's neighborhood organizations or just your individuals within Ward 1, they don't feel like they got that, and that's what they want, and that's what they want very much. And as you know, recently I got the endorsement of the Arizona Daily Star.
I was going to ask you that, yeah.
They obviously they honed in on that, how I've made a priority, constituent service will be one of my top three priorities if elected to the city council.
I'm going to ask you about housing issues, as I did Rob Elias a little bit later on in the interview.
Yes.
Sami Hamed. But I was surprised, not in the sense that you aren't deserving of it, Sami, but I was surprised to see you get the Tucson Association of Realtors endorsement as well. So you got the Daily Star. You have the real estate community, at least that group, behind you. Why do you think you got their endorsement?
Well, I also got there as well as the Pima County Recorder, Efan Rodriguez, whose office does not run these elections, which is the city clerk that runs them. But going back to TAR you're talking about was, I got it because, I answer the questions. I have ideas, obviously. And one thing that they understand and everyone else gets is I have a community record, but also approach of collaborative when I work on things in the community. And they got it. They understood that. And when it comes to the issue of home ownership, whether it's the buyer, the seller, or the realtor who's involved, it's all about the American dream, whether it's trying to buy your first home, your starter home, or even selling it to upgrade if the family gets bigger, or the realtors who are out there working hard to help make that dream come for people. Some realtors, work hard at it. They all work hard at one or the other. Some make more money, less than some more than others, money-wise. But I think that's what TAR understood and got. That's why they gave me the endorsement out there.
Yeah. So I wanted to get those out of the way because that was big news since our first interview. You did get the Arizona Daily Star endorsement. They endorsed Randy Dorman, and they endorsed Sammy Hamed in Ward 1. Randy Dorman, of course, for mayor. So one of the themes as I started to float this news that I was going to be having candidates back on the show, one of the themes that I heard a lot was, you know, we hear all the right things from these candidates, right? No candidate is saying we're good on cops, right? Our roads are great, let's move on. No one's saying that because that's not the reality. I think everybody realizes it. But one question I've gotten asked is, but I don't hear plans. I don't hear policy. I don't hear strategy. And I want to hear those things. So I'm going to ask you that question, Sammy Hamed. When we talk about public safety, when we talk about roads, when we talk about our infrastructure, how do we pay for those things? How do we get it done? And how does a Ward 1 Sammy Hamed administration advocate for getting it done?
Well, if I'm lucky in a week and a half to get elected in the primary, and from there win in November for the city council, well, we're going to get that done on roads. Let's put it this way. Prop 101, which deals with roads and public safety. We spend $40 million a year out of the $100 million on Prop 101 money on roads. Well, that's a good start. It's a real good start up to 2022. But I think we could start doing in the next fiscal year is find at least $20 million to complement the 40 we're spending already now, but dedicate that $20 million to road repair. We need to do that because our big arterials are being fixed. You can see the work that was done on Speedway, done on Congress, done on 22nd. But what about the neighborhood streets in Ward 1 and throughout Tucson? They need to be fixed. And people have told me, we'll knock on their doors, please, if you're elected, Sammy, fix our neighborhood streets. Work to repair those. That's my commitment. On that. Regarding law enforcement, more police and fire, right now of that Prop 101 money, $60 million is spent on public safety, capital improvement equipment, so more equipment, more cars, more vests, things like that for police and fire. One thing that law enforcement and public safety has asked is saying, hey, look, if you're elected to the council, would you be open to helping redirect that money in 2022 when the sales tax Prop 101 money comes up for another vote? Absolutely. I think we need to put it towards more police officers on the streets, more firefighters, EMTs out there. That'll lessen response times. It'll also allow for less crime to occur and also have that visible presence. So those would be my two solutions on those things right now, on roads and public safety.
Sammy Hamed, in 2027, when was 101 a 5 or 10 year? Remind me. I think it was a five year, right? So in 2027, when
2022.
So in 2022, you're saying you'd like to renew.
Correct.
And redirect some of those funds, less to capital, more people. I'm saying in 2027, is the city of Tucson in a place where the general fund can cover some of these things, or do you see the need for renewing the sales tax? I mean, this is a question that has come up, is do we keep bonding and raising sales tax on these things, or do we get to a point where our general fund can sustain it? What's your view on that, Sammy Hamed?
Well, I think when it comes to things like that, so let's say looking down the future in 2027, 8 more years, maybe we could. We probably could.
It should be
sustained. It should be sustained, or it could be general fund, which, of course, general fund is sales tax. That money is being spent. Prop 101 is sales tax money, not bond money whatsoever.
Right. I was conflating the two, but thank you for being there. I guess what I'm trying to get to is the strategy of either raising sales tax or bonds. I know it's on a bond for this. Do you want to see these things coming out of the general fund down the road, or?
They're going to have to come out of the general fund because the obligations of the general fund are 4 main areas as per the charter: police, fire, transportation, which includes roads, transit, and parks. Those are the 4 key components. So yeah, it's going to have to come out of the general fund in the future regardless.
Right. But you see some of these initial measures just to give us a little bit of a boost to get there as a good thing.
Absolutely, it's a good thing. And if the voters spoke loud and clear about it, 2-1 back in 2017 said, yes, we want to raise our sales tax so we can have road improvements because they're seeing some of that. They saw in the previous 5 years, and they want to give the equipment that's needed to police and fire to do their jobs.
You mentioned, I think, a number of $20 million that you'd like to see added for road repair. I know, like, for example, with Pima County, as they're starting to pay more and more of the debt service, more and more of HERF funds can actually be used to covering roads. Do you see some daylight on more and more funding going to our roads? Where do you find some of that money that you're
proposing? Find in the general fund. You look and you dig deep in the budget. You know, one thing that's never been done is, of course, if I'm elected to the city council, I would sit down with the city manager and the transportation department and look and see, where is that money going? Where is it being spent on that and those things, and dig in. You know, people might be saying, well, we don't have money. That's not true. A $1.3 billion budget that the city council passed not too long ago, you're telling me that the $20 million can't be found to do just as a start to get some road repair done? Of course it could be done. It just takes a little looking, a little reprioritizing, a little redirecting, and having the will to muster the four votes to do that. I'll be one of the votes. I hope to find three on the council to get that done.
We're with Sami Hamed, Democratic candidate for Ward 1. I asked this question just out of curiosity. I'm not looking to nail you to anything.
No problem.
Sami Hamed, is there a general part of the budget that you would look at first for some of that money, just off the top of your head? Do you have any kind of, I would look at this department first or that department first, just because I'm curious?
You know, I don't know. I haven't looked at the budget in a while, actually, to be honest with you. It's hard to say, actually, on that, to where I'm not trying to dodge or anything like that. I just haven't had a chance to look at it. And off the top of my head, nothing specifically comes to mind on that. I'd have to sit down and not just look at what's presented, but also dig into it more and ask the tougher questions and things like that. And to look at it more and hearing what the city staff would say, that would be the best way for me to do it. And if I'm elected, that's the first thing I'll do, is sit down with the manager and his staff and find out how we can look for the next fiscal year to find that money in to fix that. Even though $20 million, as an example, is not a lot for neighborhood streets, it's not. I'll be honest, we need more. But we got to start somewhere. I think that'd be a good start.
Sami Hamed, there's a few daylight issues, like I said, that I think, and I say this in a good way, because I think when Democratic voters are filling in their bubbles to mail them back, I think candidates want folks to know what the differences are and to make decisions based on that clarity. And so I think there's a few issues that have popped up over the last couple months that create some differences in a good way between the candidates. You've been working in organizing and policy for a long time. We can reallocate certain items of the budget, but I think we also have to look at how we grow the budget. And I know that's important to you. I look at situations like Grand Canyon University. I think it's an iconic situation, an iconic decision in Ward 1 that had some economic development components behind it, that had some preservation components behind it. There's a lot of open space in Ward 1. And so I feel like Ward 1 is really this place where a lot of kind of key Tucson decisions are made in kind of a smaller way. How does a Sami Hamed Ward 1 council leadership make decisions like Grand Canyon University? How would you do it differently? And how do you preserve this historic element of our community while also driving the economic growth we need to make sure that we can accomplish the goals that are important to you and important to me?
Well, in regard to something like you're talking about Grand Canyon, basically, obviously, diligence wasn't done on something like Grand Canyon. You know, they looked at something like El Rio Neighborhood Center and the golf course, and they said, well, this would be a perfect spot for it. Well, obviously, the lack of due diligence or the homework that wasn't done was learning about the history, more about that, and hearing what the community's pulse was on that. I don't think the community is against Grand Canyon being in, because I've met a lot of voters knocking on doors who said, hey, I really wish Grand Canyon would have been there. We could have had those jobs. And I'm not against that either, having Grand Canyon come in and get those jobs. I'm just against it where they could have put it exactly at El Rio. I think there's plenty of open space opportunities and others, or even other spaces that are currently used that could have been rebranded or repurposed for bringing in Grand Canyon. That could have been done and things like that. And we obviously missed the opportunity pretty badly on something like that. And we could have been done. So the key is a part of a job, Zach, I say, as being council member, is I'm not here to talk. I'm here to listen and learn and make the best decision possible. I tell people, if you elect me, that's what I'm going to do. But in order for me to listen and learn, it requires my time. I tell people that if I'm elected to city council, I will give up my day job with Savvy Services for the Blind and work as a council member full time, because to address the issues, the needs, and problems of Ward 1, but also across the city, doesn't require 50% of my time. It requires 100% of my time, as well as having the best staff possible to bring on to the job to get that done and to serve the residents of Ward 1 and throughout Tucson.
Sami Hamed is our guest here in studio for the next few minutes, a Democratic candidate for Ward 1 City Council. There's two daylight issues that I want to ask you about, and we have 10 minutes, so I think we can get through it pretty sufficiently. But Sammy, the sanctuary city topic, Tucson Families Free and Together, which was put on the ballot last week, that was it became national news for one reason or another.
Pretty sure guy brought it, put on the map. He broke the internet and Twitter all at once.
He did. The nation knows that
Eddie
Tucson Families Free and Together is on the ballot.
He's a meme and all.
But it's been interesting to watch the conversation within the Ward 1 race. You have Miguel Ortega, who's been pretty strong about being in support of it for a while. You have said you've been in support of it for a while. It seems to me that Lane has evolved in her position on that, and Rob Elias has been pretty firm about being against it. You believe that this is a good thing for the city. I have a question and follow up, but why? What's your position on Sanctuary City?
Sure. Well, to answer your question first, but first of all, my opponents have to get to their position in their own way. Some get there faster than others. Some just take a slow path to it.
You're generous.
But I got to my position on this on Sanctuary. I do support it, actually, and I'll tell you the story why, and I've told this to audiences and stuff, is that I volunteer as a citizenship instructor for Pima College Adult Education at the Valencia Library. And one day, while getting ready to teach my class one night, which I do once a week, a woman came in. I thought she came in to ask some questions about the class and sign up so she could take it. I thought, okay, she must be a legal permanent resident, is ready to start the process of naturalization. That wasn't it. She came in asking for help. She was trying to get some resources and assistance because she'd been a domestic violence victim at the hands of her husband, her and her two kids. And she wanted help because she was trying to get an order of protection. She couldn't get it. The police had her go to city court, but at the time she got it, that on she was trying to get it on an emergency basis, they couldn't assist her. No one who spoke Spanish at the time. Police arrested her husband, got him out of the house, but she needed that help. But in addition to that, she needed help protecting her kids. Why? She's an undocumented immigrant. And I told her, you should talk to domestic, Emerge Center for Domestic Abuse. They're a great resource in town. They could help you. They have everything. So she said, I'm going to meet with them in a few days. I said, okay, let them know about you need an order of protection. Let them know whatever, anything you need, including if you need a special visa for victims of domestic violence. They can help. And if they don't, come back either way and let me know. Well, she came back a week later when I went to teach my class the next week, and she said, hey, thanks for your help. They were helpful. They got the order of protection, which she showed me. They moved me out of the house to a safe space where my husband can't find me or my kids. And they're helping me get on the start the process to get a visa so she could have that protection under the law so she can work and support her kids without having to depend on her husband. People like her moved me to support Sanctuary because she was willing to be brave and come out of the shadows, didn't worry about what the consequences may be. That's what people like her moved me. And she didn't just do it because it was not the right thing to do to call the police. She did it to protect her own two kids. And that's why she did it. The Sanctuary Initiative doesn't protect criminals. It protects victims of crime. The Sanctuary Initiative does not put handcuffs or tie our law enforcement's hands here in the city of Tucson. If anything, it could be a tool and help them as well. And it provides a form of accountability as well. No one says that we can't turn anyone over to be arrested or be put in a jail. Once they go to the Pima County Jail, that's a whole different agency. The city has no control over that whatsoever. All these things you hear and say is not true. In other cities that have done and become sanctuary cities or incorporated sanctuary policies, they've withstood the legal challenges so far. So far, they've won.
Sammy Hamed, the concern I've heard on some of those things from the community is, and I actually think that there is a case to be made that it's very likely that we won't lose funding, right? Because we've seen around the country that the funding hasn't been pulled.
That's correct.
The other concern that I think actually carries more weight, and I want to get your thoughts on this, is the limitations that the ordinance would put on TPD collaboration with state and federal agencies on, as you said, some of the criminal elements in our community. For example, the sex trafficking, the stop to some major sex trafficking that happened last week. And the other thing that when you look at the data, is that the number of cases where undocumented individuals call our local law enforcement and have any kind of deportation challenge or anything like that is staggeringly low. Just by the numbers, Sammy, our police force do a fantastic job following the immigrant welcoming city kind of standard operating procedures. So those are the concerns I've heard in the community, more on the law enforcement side than the funding side. What's your response to that in a minute or two?
Sure. Well, regarding the welcoming immigrants or welcoming city ordinance, and also the Tucson Police Department's general orders, they're good. I think we need to codify those and put them in the charter, actually, if anything, because, you know, they could be, if it's currently the way it's done now, you know, with the stroke of a pen, a future police chief could wipe out the general orders, if you will. The city ordinance can be wiped out with four votes. But the point being is regarding this, the Tucson Families Free Together Initiative, or Proposition 205, it's known as, this is brought by, it wasn't brought by the mayor and council, it was brought by the voters to put it to the ballot. The voters are the ones who did it. They got the required signatures to do that. So they're doing that, and they're just bringing that vote directly to the people, that form of direct democracy on that. But regarding what you're talking about, like I said, about law enforcement, it doesn't hamper collaboration, doesn't whatsoever. It doesn't tie our hands from working with the FBI and other federal agencies like that to share information. In fact, we've worked with federal agencies. Look at the case of Ezebel Cedis, that young girl who was murdered. If it wasn't for the FBI, we would have never solved the case. Tucson police would have never solved it, but FBI made the world a difference on that one and helped crack the case for us with their intelligence and DNA sharing and all that good stuff that they have to help determine who the killer was.
So, Sammy, there's so many other things that you have a lot of experience to speak to. There's one other that I want to get to.
Go for it.
But just to just do my job in the best way possible, one final question on this is, you don't feel like the request that agencies turn over some of their autonomy and follow Tucson Families Free and Together ordinance, if should it pass, is going to create a challenge to that collaboration?
No, I don't think it's going to create a challenge whatsoever, if anything like that. If anything, it'll help us and things like that and do that, you know. And if anything, I think it's just codifying what's been done, codifying, like I said, the general ordinance and the welcoming ordinance, and puts it into charter. That's what it basically does whatsoever. But like I said, it's been put to the ballot, but the final ultimate word belongs to the people. So on November 5th, the general election, they're going to have to say whether they want to leave it as is or take the next step and just codify it by putting it into the city charter.
We're with Sammy Hamed, Democratic candidate for Ward 1 City Council. We have 2 minutes left, Sammy, before I want to leave time for your platform and how to get a hold of you and a final call to action.
Sure.
I'll put it this way. In this race, whether it's mayoral or Ward 1 or whatever, there's been conversation around affordable housing. And there have been proposals around rent control, inclusionary zoning, practices in other cities that have been used to tackle this challenge, but are in Arizona not legal. You can't do them. There have been basically saying, well, we'll change that and make it happen, or a more market-based approach. How does a Sammy Hamed, Ward 1 City Council representative, make affordable housing more possible in Ward 1? And I'm asking you a simple question. I'm
sure, simple but loaded. That was all. The preface was pretty loaded. Games there. But how do we make affordable housing affordable here? How do we create it? Well, first of all, Zach, a city has something, a great tool at their disposal, like Tucson does. We have our zoning powers. That's our key number one authority as a city. You know, we can leverage and determine how we grow and where we grow, and we can help create affordable housing of that. We've done that at times. We do it here and there. Like I live in the Menlo Park neighborhood, and we're creating affordable housing right now. So when we push redevelopments and rezonings and things like that, or planned area developments, which is part of the zoning process as well, we should require and say, hey, look, you should put some affordable zoning in there, affordable housing, in there, and make it a requirement, because in order to grow and do that and get that way, we can help be the driver of that. And I think it's a good thing that we do that at times and things, no matter whether it's we're building 10 units of housing on a piece of land or a few hundred, there should be a certain percentage that should be set aside for affordable housing. We can do that. And by just doing that, I think it also could change the practice and the culture, if you will, of home building, of knowing that if we do as time goes on, home builders will look at that and see the opportunity occurring that, hey, we need to look at affordable housing, and that could help us, the city, alleviate the problem and things like that. Regarding things like rent control, I don't believe in rent control. I don't think it's appropriate. My dad, being a landlord, he owns a few rental units in Ward 1, actually. You shouldn't tie the hands, because the rent goes both ways. You know, the owner who has to pay for various maintenance and upkeep things, but as well as the renter who has to pay their rent on a reasonable basis. I think there's nothing wrong with capping annually how much could be charged, but I would never put a complete flat cap, some form of rent control like it's done.
Sammy, admirable job of answering a loaded question.
I tried, thanks.
I apologize. You did a great
no
job.
Problem.
We have 30 seconds on the dot, sir. Your website, call to action.
My website is samihamed.com, SamiHamed.com. I asked for your vote in this election. You have until Wednesday, August 21st to send your ballot in order to be counted in time. Or you can go vote in person on August 27th at one of the six polling places. The two in Ward, the two that affect Ward 1 are the El Pueblo Neighborhood Center and also the City of Tucson Community Services Office, which is located on Commerce Park Loop between Congress and St. Mary's. So I ask for your vote. I'm Sammy Hamed, Democrat running for Ward 1 City Council.
Sammy, thank you so much.
Thank you, Zach.
We'll see you soon. Tucson, come on back. Creative City Show comes back in a minute.